Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on the radio broadcast, streaming live at those times, and the podcasts are on the homepage of richarddugan.com as well as the radio show's page. You might be asking yourself why. Well, because the radio show's page is where I was originally uploading and creating all the links and so forth. I am my own webmaster. But I'm not my own dentist or physician, because I'd have a fool for a patient. But we have podcasts that are on SoundCloud, and that's where you will find on the homepage the SoundCloud playlists for 2018 and now 2019. And we're working on 2017 and going back to 2007, and we're going to get there eventually. Be that as it may, the programs are on podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, that's the other one, as well as the other previously mentioned locations. So we encourage you to go there, listen to the full interview. And I would recommend that you do just that, because the interviews go longer than just the 50-minute program that you hear on the radio. And so you're going to want to go to the podcasts, as I was just saying, so that you can hear the entire interview. Also, if you'd like to support the work that we're doing here, if it resonates with you and you would like to do that, we are gratefully appreciative of that. So we do have a PayPal account that is set up. If you go to both the missions page, reading what we are all about, if you're only listening now for maybe the first time, there's also a link on the homepage above the 2019 SoundCloud playlist that you can also support us through that same PayPal link. So again, anything that you would like to support us with is gratefully appreciated. And we also accept energetic healing as well. We can use all of the support we can get, and we try to support all of you as well through the programs that we do here. And speaking of physicians, you say, I'm not my own dentist nor my own physician, because again, as I said, I would have a fool for a patient. But in this case, not today. I'm not going to be my own healer or physician per se. I'm going to have on the program today a healer who is joining us for the first time out of Los Angeles. His name is Daniel the Healer. And Daniel, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And it's great to have you on the program. And in the future, I think what we're going to do is we're going to have you maybe come up here and have you live in studio to converse with us. But thanks for joining us via Skype today.
Oh, you're most welcome. And thank you for having me. It is a pleasure.
To
participate in your big undertaking.
Well, it is a big undertaking. And years ago, I used to hear the phrase, I want to just change the world. You hear that from, you know, the competitors, if you will, competing in like the Miss USA or Miss Universe pageant, you know. So what is your goal? I want world peace, and I want this. And those are wonderful things. Don't get me wrong. But it seems like an awful big bite to chew. And yet at the same time, it is possible. All we have to do is begin where we are with what we have to work with. And you have a great deal to work with. You would consider yourself, as I do, a metaphysician. Is that right?
That is correct.
And as a metaphysician, you share your, shall we say, abilities or skills, if you will, that you have learned over the years with those who seek you out, and it's just wonderful to come across someone who is of like mind, as we try to have on our program, to help people to and how I've heard this phrased in many different ways. Okay, some people say so that you can bring about their healing. To put them back into balance. What is it that through the work that you do, how would you phrase that?
Well, the best way to phrase this is, I kind of have to back up a little bit if you're okay with that. And if it meanders for too long, just interrupt me.
No worries.
But I'm not only a metaphysician, I'm also a magician. Magician in the sense that We all create our own reality, but once you know how to do this consciously, then you become a magician, meaning that you can influence that which happens to you, which comes to you seemingly unrelated to you from the external world. The way that unfolds, you can intervene with that and make changes so that it unfolds the way that you prefer to have it. That's what I consider to be a magician. And so within this, I've learned to use my heart, my heart energy, meaning energy that I create and project out of my heart chakra. And that's one of the tools that I use in my healing work. And so when somebody comes to me and says, yeah, this and that and that and the other, then I quote unquote run heart love into that. And them receiving it at the other end, they then, their cells say, oh, we're not doing it right. I guess we need to do it this way. And they go back into the way that they're supposed to function just by them being illuminated, so to speak, by the love that I project into them. That's how I work my healing. Now, it is true what you say, that people heal themselves. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it is mainly dependent upon how receptive they are.
So that brings me to one particular modality called Reiki, where that's actually what they taught us, my wife and I, as we went through our three levels of training to become master Reiki healers, is that the energy that we send out, whether it be to the person there, say on the massage table, and we're doing the healing there, the transfer of energy, or if you're doing an absentee, that the goal is not for us to heal them, it's for us to send that energy to them to use it as they see fit and as they want to do. I've used this example many times when we did an absentee healing for my father's brother many years ago. They gave us a picture and we sat in our living room, sat on the floor and began the process and sent him the energy. And then about a week later, we got a report that he had passed, but that this is what had happened. But prior to his passing, that initially he took his drugs, his medications, and he threw them against the wall because he was so frustrated and so forth. Then he got into his wheelchair and he rolled across the compound where he and his family lived to where his son resided. And he went in and they had their closure, if you will. And then a day or so later, he passed. And so he used the energy for what he wanted to use it for. Yet maybe he could have also used it if he had so chosen to do so. To eradicate those renegade rogue cells, stopping them in their tracks, so to speak. But isn't that really what it is all about? Is it's what you want to do with that energy, regardless of what the modality is, because
that's exactly right. I mean, the only difference in my healing based on this is that I also, we are in really interesting times, and one of the aspects of these times is that we are becoming conscious and aware, and that we're becoming more empowered. And so, yes, I will send the love energy, but I will also try to figure out what is not working well, and I will explain that to them so that they can make empowered choices out of that knowledge.
I know, too, that when I was working for a Christian radio station back in Phoenix, they used to have, throughout the 15 years I worked there, a number of different call-in prayer programs. And they would call in for their healing and for other issues. And those that would call in for healing, it seemed like they were always the same people calling in every week, month after month, year after year. And I thought, this is really odd. Why isn't this working? Aren't these programs and these people being healed by the people who are praying for them? And what I came to realize was that it wasn't about, they really weren't looking for their healing per se. What they were looking for was a connection, community. They needed to feel as though they belonged to a group. And I have had that feeling myself, you know, in terms of becoming a member of a particular philosophy and so forth. So that's another aspect of it that we don't really, you know, we don't really think about. It's like, yeah, I know I want my healing, but what I really need is I need human contact.
Yeah, that's very important. And, you know, there was a fellow named Maslow who looked at human needs and, you know, the need for love, the need for security. But there's also in there the need to belong. We are social creatures. We are not that what we are being projected as in this, 2019 kind of environment where we're all being pushed to produce and to be obedient members of society and to do what we were told and to live in our four walls and not connect with anybody else. That is not us. We are social creature. We come here because there's other people. Otherwise, you could incarnate in a place where you're all by yourself. But the whole part of human development and becoming aware and becoming conscious happens within the confines of interaction with other people. So this is, yes, indeed, very important. We do want to belong. We do want to be part of a community. And that community gives us input. It gives us sustenance. It gives us all that which we basically, you know, we as humans, we have needs. It fulfills all these needs.
Yeah. Well, now you've been involved in, I suppose I can put it this way, the healing arts, if you will, for more than 40 years. You've been a metaphysician. You've been studying spiritual philosophies and techniques and practices and so forth. How did that begin for you? What was the, I like to use the word catalyst, that that sent you on your way to where now here we are talking here on the program in 2019?
Yes, and that's a very, very long story. So, like I said, if it gets too long, interrupt me. First of all, I'm 71 years old. I was born in Switzerland to some very, very intellectual, non-feeling parents. I'm a little Taurus, meaning I'm very sensuous and love the touch, the feel. I'm comfortable in my body. And they were Aquarian, which means that they were always in their minds. Now, Switzerland is a very strict country. Everybody runs on the clock. There is a news is three times a day through national radio, and just before the news, there's going to be the broadcast of a signal so that everybody can coordinate and set their watches to the second, because everything in Switzerland is precise. And so all kinds of things happened, and I found myself in the United States, and I'm still here because once I was here, I realized how much freedom of lifestyle there is in the United States. And compared to here, I considered even the Swiss are like so meticulous and they're clean and it's a beautiful country, but they're really anal retentive. So that's why I stayed here ultimately once I realized it. So I was very left brain. All I knew is I had a body. I had thoughts. I did not understand about emotions. I did not understand about energies. I wasn't always involved with healing. I've had many other careers. My initial career was in the hotel industry. And so once I was done with my studies and learning the trade, I decided to travel around the world. And as an employee in a hotel, that's very easy. You just write a hotel in this town and you say, hey, can you use somebody in your hotel? And because I was valedictorian of the best hotel management school in the world. I had all the doors were open, so I went to the Princess Hotel in Bermuda. I was transferred to the Bahamas, and in 73 they became independent, and they threw out all the people that were not from their country, and my work permit wasn't renewed, and I wasn't ready to go home, so I came to the United States as a tourist. So still only physical and mental. It's about 4 years into being in this country, somebody that I met, a friend of mine, said, hey, you ought to really experience this woman. She is a Greek coffee grinds reader. Oh, okay. I'm up for it. Anything crazy, why not? So I went to visit this woman, and she predicted three events that were going to happen to me within 6 weeks. And she described them rather precisely. And by golly, within 6 weeks, all three events manifested exactly the way she described it. That just simply blew my bubble. It was outside of that which I could until then think of or even consider. For somebody to predict precisely three events that would happen that unfolded, that, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm still blown away when I think of it. Now I understand why and how and all that, and they worked fine, but it opened my eyes. It opened my eyes to, it gave me the very first input that there were actually things beyond that which you could perceive with your senses.
Hmm.
And so simultaneously, around that time, I was also studying for a private pilot's license. I was attracted to fly a little airplane, and I learned how to do that. And I had a really hard time learning about this. And so somebody else suggested, well, why don't you go and try hypnosis? And so I found myself a hypnotist. And we had one-hour session, and he, what, you know, normally would be called put me under, meaning that I was in a trance-like state, and he gave me suggestions that how easy it would be for me to read and learn and comprehend, and then he clicked his fingers, he brought me back up, and he said, okay, you're on your own. And whereas before that, the book had 12 lessons, it took me like 7 weeks to learn five lessons. In one more week, I learned all 12 lessons. I passed my exam with flying colors in the high 90s. And so that also blew my bubble, that somebody could give you suggestions, verbal suggestions, and that this would actually become true. So a few weeks later, when I received the letter from that same doctor hypnotist that he was going to teach this, I took the class. And once I took the class in Florida, then there was no licensure. If you learn, you got certified as a hypnotist, you could put out a shingle. And that's what I decided to do. I put out a shingle and I started to hypnotize people. So this really was the trigger point of what changed around for me to come from this complete left brain, logical linear, into understanding that we function on all four levels, namely the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual energetic. And I worked with that, and I learned more and did more things. The main thing of which, just also around that time, is I was introduced to an entity that is being channeled through a guy named Jack Purcell called Lazarus. And for 40 some years, I've been taking Lazarus seminars, learning about all kinds of things that are not in the physical, and adding to my knowledge and adding to my knowledge and adding to my knowledge. And here we are.
Well, it sounds to me like you're not finished yet, because every so often new innovations, if you will, or ideas surface from ancient writings and so forth. Is that a fair assessment that, you know, you're not done yet?
No, there's always more to learn. And when renowned healers come into town and do things, and if they have talks about it, I go there. I get the energy. I learn. I assimilate. I try new things, continuously expanding, and going. And I'm still partaking in Lazarus seminars, and it just feels phenomenal. You need, I mean, for all people out here, you and this is not something that normally I just say casually, but you need to understand that at this point in my life, I'm an enlightened person. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a very high statement to say, but to me, what it means is that I am consciously aware of all the things before I became physical, before I was born, that I have a conscious thread that goes through my whole life of what happened, why it happened, and how it fit into the bigger picture of what I came to do in this physical reality around this time into my present. So there is a continuous link of consciousness and awareness from before I was born to my present, who I am now. This is really important to understand. This is not an easy task and an easy feat. Mm. So that's why I can say that I am enlightened. I'm also self-realized, meaning that I have figured out my self-awareness, my self-love, my self-worth, my self-esteem, my self-confidence, and my self-respect. Mm. And that I am full. Mm-hmm. I'm full of myself.
But
that can be taken also, you know, you're full of bull, but no. I am full of myself in the sense that I'm aware of what is happening and why it is happening, and as such can function in this reality at this point with ease and elegance, with magic, with love, with joy, with fulfillment, and all that kind of stuff. So I've come a long way, baby.
Yeah. Would you say that when you say you're full of self, that was with a small s per se, and that's what we're all trying to achieve, is that awareness of self, the where we belong in the universe or where we fit in, and acknowledging. And I know this is probably one of the most difficult parts for most humans to grasp, and that is the difference between the confidence that you speak of, that you have in the work that you do, versus a boastful, braggadocious type of, shall we say, arrogance. We have a hard time saying, you know what, I'm good at this or that or the other thing. Whereas there are others who, they have no problem with that, and they let everybody know just how good they are. And then maybe when you start working with that particular individual, it's like, well, you talk a good game, but I haven't really seen the results of that game play out, you know. And so that's where we really need to, for example, the work that I do, whether it be interviewing or producing commercials or books or other radio programs and so forth, I'm good at what I do. And there's nothing wrong with me acknowledging that. But it's also, I found, and the universe is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful teacher, because I have, and fortunately this has only happened a few times in my early days, where I get too full of myself and the universe has a way of humbling me. I get my comeuppance, as it were.
Mildly expressed.
Exactly. And so I really try to keep that in check, because I know a lot of people in this industry, boy, you know, they get to a certain level and it's like, well, don't you know who I am? You know, I am so-and-so, and you should be letting me in here or letting me do this or what have you. And it's like, no, you put your pants on one leg at a time, just like me. So sorry, you know, we're on the same level here. You just happen to do a different work. And speaking of that work, you are I've heard this phrase before. Describe this to me. What is a psychic surgeon?
Okay, so can I, though, say before we answer this question, can I pick up on what you just said?
Yes.
And follow up with an additional comment on what you just told us about, you know, being full of yourself and,
yes,
and what the point is there?
Go for it.
Okay, so the distinction here that needs to be made is between being and doing. You are never better than anybody else. You're not worse than anybody else. If you think you're better or worse than anybody else, you are in the negative aspect of your ego.
Mm-hmm.
So what it deals with is that you need to be able to, whatever you are better at is part of your doingness. See, beingness is feminine, doingness is a masculine energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you consider this, we are all equal. That's who we are. That's part of the beingness. But as soon as you think that you are better than somebody else, then that's when you're flying off the handle. That's when you get into these situations, because whatever you do, it doesn't make you better. It's like, but it's part of how we were brought up, because when we failed a few times, we were told that we are a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's vastly, vastly different. Regardless of how many times you failed, you are not a failure. You are a human being just like everybody else, with a spirit and a soul made of the same divine material than everybody else. So that's the differentiation, is whether you consider yourself to be better, or which is not appropriate, or that you can say, hey, you know, I'm doing this better than he. When I do brain surgery, that I have better results overall than my colleague who also does brain surgeries. So that's where we need to keep things straight. Now, mm-hmm, back to psychic surgery.
Yes.
There's different views of what it is. There is the Filipino description, where there is little pieces of body parts and blood that fly through the room. But this is sleight of hands. These are chicken parts. They do not go with their hands into the body and make things change. What is happening there is, whenever these healers work with people, there are a lot of them in a room, and the one being worked at in the moment is in the center on a table, and the psychic surgeon works with them, and the blood flies around, and because of the placebo effect and the belief that by having that done, one gets better, people get better. And so the idea is that you quote unquote watch the person in the middle, and then another one and another one, and it's your turn, and you've just seen three that this has been done and that are feeling better, and so you're going to feel better too. So that's one way of describing psychic surgery. The other way, which is the way that I use, is that I go with permission into a person's psyche. I go into their energy field, I go into their chakras, I go into their aura, and I change things around. So and this happens, I see this all the time. Let's assume that you've been psychically attacked. Now, it not always is intentional. It's sometimes people attack other people psychically without realizing that they do this. It's just part of the intensity of how they respond. But if somebody betrays you in a manner of speaking, that may be described as they stuck a knife in my back. Mm. Well, psychically, I see this knife. It still sits there. It still is in their back. And it is affecting them on an energetic level. And so I will go in there and with surgical procedure in my imagination, I will give them a blood transfusion. I will give them anesthesia. I will carefully pull that knife out. I will clean the wound. I will wash it out. I will disinfect it. I will suture it. I will put bandages around it, and I will disconnect the blood transfusion. So I'm using surgical imagery to intervene in difficult situations that I perceive are happening in your psyche. Mm. That's what I consider to be psychic surgery.
I know that there are so many, again, different types and modalities that are out there of healing. And, you know, I've often heard of different things that are going on around the world, different people trying different things of this nature. And I know that there's this situation that's going on where people with, I guess I could use the word nefarious intent, are using waves. Different kinds of waves, and in this case, microwaves. But everything has a vibration, ergo creating a wave that's actually harming people. That's actually causing an imbalance and a dis-ease in them, and those kinds of things that are happening. And you know, these kinds of things can be used to help us and to build us up and to lift us up and to move our civilization and our societies forward. Or propel them in the reverse, and it all depends upon your intent. And that's one of the things that's somewhat perplexed me, and I'm curious about your observations about this, especially when I was sharing an idea of a concept that I had come up with, and I was told, oh, no, this guest that I was going to have on, he won't talk about that because he doesn't want that information to fall into the wrong hands. And it seemed like, to me, this person was making the assumption that I was the only person on the planet that had realized this particular concept, you know, and I know that that's not the case because what we experience, and I'm sure you've had this happen with you, is you run across people or you hear about people who are doing similar work that you are, but you've never heard of them before. What about all of these different modalities? And from your perspective, as a metaphysician, as a spiritual person, as a I could even use the concept or the phrase a divine healer, because you are using those energies, if you will, to help people to move forward in their lives and their process and their purpose in life. What about those out there that aren't? They're not about the beneficial. I can't even think of the correct pronunciation of this word. The beneficial use of these gifts, but their ego's gotten in the way, and so forth. We've heard about this kind of stuff, especially during the Cold War of the 1900s, the 20th century. What can you, without going too far into this, because I want to keep this an upbeat, what is your perspective on maintaining a, and I have trouble with some of these words because I'm learning that there is no positive negative. It just is, things are just what they are. But let's use those terms for the sake of the lack of other terms. What about the positive versus the negative uses of these energies, these techniques? Have you run across any come across any of this?
Yeah, I've come across quite a bit. From time to time, I connect with people who have really weird things happen that they have no idea where they come from, and sometimes it's really hard to sort out where that is all coming from. But we have a real good friend who lives in the Keys, the Florida Keys, and she's the victim of some of these government microwave attacks. To her, it appears as voices that tell her to do really awful things to other people. And she used to live in Miami, and it was really bad. And then she moved to the Keys, which is further away from certain transmission points. And it majorly reduced, and she can more or less function, but she's a vegetable. This happens a lot to ex-government employees because their government knows who they are. They have stuff on them, and they can train and focus these waves specifically. It's like when I do radionics, which is another healing modality where you use an instrument to send certain frequencies. I need, in my input well, I need a photograph or of hair or a bit of saliva of the person so that the system knows who to send it to. Mm. Now, that is just confirming what you're saying, but on a larger level,
yeah,
on a more a higher perspective, you need to understand that there are several universes. This is not the only universe, but this particular universe is the free will universe. This is where we come to practice our will. And because of that, nobody, the divine, cannot intervene. They cannot, you know, mm-hmm. When Newtown shooting this 22-year-old went to this grade school and killed all these kids, a lot of people said, well, all these innocent children lost their lives. Why doesn't God intervene? Because part of the deal is this is a free will universe, and the divine cannot intervene with your free will. So now, knowing about this and thinking about circumstances of what is going on and what's happening, not everybody is at the same level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody who hasn't figured out the principles of loving principles, what it is to honor, to respect, to be truthful and be loyal and courageous and all these elements that are part of a something you get into it when you realize that you're a divine being.
Yeah.
But not everybody's there yet. And so if they're at a place in their development where they don't have a conscience, where they don't have scruples, then whatever I want to do, I can do, and I will do it because it's available. And so a lot of these things is happening just because. Now, some of it has to do with greed. When we talked about the ego, we are so steeped in a society where the amount of assets that you own determine the status of who you are, that people will do whatever they need to do to be on top of the pyramid without consideration for anybody else, because in their consciousness development, it's not something that has come up yet. It's natural to them to be doing that.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. I remember somebody was explaining to me the whole aspect of why for, and this was the example they used, why you see people like the Kennedy family behaving in the way that they do, whether the accurate portrayals were correct in say the movie Chappaquiddick, or you know, you just take a look at history, the way that they were raised is the way that they behave, and that for them this was normal. Okay, but you and I, we wouldn't behave that way because we weren't raised that way. We were raised by a different set of mores, so to speak, or rules and so on. But for them, that, and again, I'm not casting aspersions on the Kennedys or anybody else in that regard. All I'm saying is as an observer, There's an old biblical passage that goes, train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And that's sort of a two-edged sword. On the one hand, it's the way you've trained this child is the way they're going to be as an adult. And then when you take a look at the adult, that's the way they were trained as a child. And so when you hear about different individuals, in regardless of what arena they're in, what industry, what institution, if you will, as we refer to governmental institutions, religious, political, etc., and you hear them and they have this explosion of emotion in some fashion, and people are just appalled. Well, for them, that's normal, because that was the way they were raised. That was the way they were taught to be. And it was okay, because they weren't told something different.
Exactly. And it's still happening today. Look at our current president.
Yeah.
His father was a slumlord, and he did whatever he needed to do to squeeze the last little drop of money out of these people that were living in his buildings.
Yeah.
And so little currently now, our president, Donald J. Trump, was raised in that environment, and he thought that was normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's okay. I don't want to pay these people. I go bankrupt. Yeah, my father was done the same thing. Oh, I do this other venture. Oh, okay. Well, I'm running out of money. Let's go bankrupt. Let's let people just hold the bag and suffer and not. I don't have to fulfill my obligations. It's just because that's the way I was raised, and that's the way I think. And because of that, I assume that that is okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're totally on target.
And on the one hand, there's a part of one, and I would say of myself, and this would be more the personality and the ego that would say, well, yeah, but that's not right, and we need to teach other people, you know, how to behave. I do have to say that I had to go through two phases following the 2016 period, where I was able to say, and I have to say that when I first said it, it was really hard, but now it's quite easy. And that is, thank you, teacher, Donald J. Thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I do not want to behave. And then a few months later, I was actually able to get to the point where I say, I forgive you. But even more importantly, I forgive myself. When we come back from the break, can we talk more about forgiveness and what that's all about?
Oh, certainly. I'll go wherever you want to go.
All right. Very good. And I'm going where the universe takes us. So there you go. We're in good hands in that regard. I'm Richard Dugan, and I'm talking with Daniel Healer, and that is the website, danielhealer.com. We encourage you to go there and find out more about Daniel and the work that he does and how he can assist and help and support you in your process. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And as I've said many, many times on this program, don't go away.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are talking with Daniel the Healer. And to me, it's fascinating because the healing process is so vast, and it doesn't just include specific things that we think they would include, because, and maybe it goes back, Daniel, to what I was referring to earlier in the program, specifically about the concepts contained in Reiki healing, that the energy is not mine to control and to use in whatever fashion I want. I have to come at it from a higher place, a more divine place, where I want what's best for this other person. And I guess the other best way for me to describe that is having to do with success. And I've taken this philosophy with me, and I look at it this way, that if I want to make you successful. And in this case, let's say I want to make you, Daniel the Healer, successful. Because if you're successful, then I'm successful. So if I send this energy out to someone who is hurting, ailing, what have you, I'm not putting expectations on it. I'm going to say, look, I'm just going to give this to you so you have a little extra to do with it what you want and go where you want to go and be who you want to be. That's entirely up to you. And isn't it true that when we take it from that perspective, that it comes back to us in a myriad different ways, maybe 100 or 1,000-fold, that we could never have imagined had we not gone to that higher place in terms of assisting and supporting others?
Yes, totally. I have proof of that. So one way of what you described is being said out there is a rising tide lifts all ships. So if I simply, it can be some very, very simple thing. If I smile at the checkout counter person in the supermarket and they smile back at me because I smiled at them, it can change their whole attitude for the rest of the day. It can change things around where their life unfolds differently. You know, there is this thing that is being said about a butterfly flying through the air and the tiny, tiny little air currents that are created by the butterfly on the other side of the world will create a storm. So the slightest little thing that you do from the point of view of being a loving person, of wanting others to be better, to have it better, to have more love in their life, because that's what we're looking for. We're looking to receive love. To fulfill this will create a world. When you start to project love from your heart into the world, the universe recognizes that. They said, oh, look, down there, oh, this one, yeah, they're projecting love. They're creating, they're using their innate capabilities of doing this, and they're sending love bubbles into their world. We're going to support him or her. We're going to send all the good things that they desire along their way so that they can do more of that. And so the universe will respond. I have developed something. It's been around forever, metaphysically, that you receive the energies from your life force through your crown chakra, the white light coming down, and that the earth is sending you the earth energies, the red light coming up, and that these two energies, if they mix in your heart chakra, will actually create the pink light of love. They will take the raw materials, and somehow in your heart that happens, and then you can project the love into your environment. I even have a video that I created about that called Activating Your Heart Love.
Now, these videos are on YouTube, right?
No, these are only on my website.
Okay, and that's danielthehealer.com. We encourage you to check out these videos. Go ahead and continue.
And so by sending out love into my world, the world responds to me as such. I am at a point in my life where I know that the divine loves me unconditionally. It's behind me. It will support me. It will protect me. It will make certain that my survival is covered. So you see, when you put out love into the world, what's happening, you as the individual, you have quote-unquote channels, outgoing channels of love and incoming channels of love. And so once you use your outgoing channels of love and you're putting love into the world, then you can go and talk to the universe and say, hey, you know, I would prefer that in the incoming channels of love that you added this, 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 and the other. And if there's no charge on it, and if you don't have any intention on that for nefarious purposes, then the universe will fulfill that for you. And so you can start with building up your capacity to send love into your world, to support people. And that doesn't mean that you take on their stuff. That's really important to know. Don't be the good Samaritan and say, oh, poor you, let me take it from you. I'll take your pain. That's not how you do it. What you do when you see somebody who is suffering, you say, oh, I'm really sorry that you have compassion. I'm really sorry that you're going through this. And I wish you, because your imagination is so powerful, I wish you that things become better for you. And here, I'll send you a little bubble of love, of light, that will support you in this.
Yeah. That's really important, too. And that also helps to foster one of the more important attributes, if you will, of our society and civilization in general. That helps to support community. Because each one of us, even if I came to you, Daniel, and I said, hey, I need some help with this, that, or the other thing, whatever it might be, you're there to support me. And then I either will support you in whatever fashion is appropriate, but then I can then turn around and I now have the energy, the strength, if you will, to then support someone else. And I've spoken of this analogy quite often. It's as if we are all climbing a ladder. There's someone above us and someone below us. And this also goes to your point earlier about how we are not greater or lesser than anyone else. But the ladder analogy is where I've got someone above me and below me, and the person above me has reached their hand down to help me up. I, in turn, reach my hand down to help the person below me. And in turn, we all are able to move up that ladder. And in my career in particular, I have always acknowledged that there are people I want to teach who want to know what I know, and there are also others who know a hell of a lot more than I do, and I'd like to learn from them. And so I don't hold on to this information. I don't want to, because if I do, I get stuck. So it comes down to this this concept I'd like for you to expound on, especially from a spiritual, metaphysical standpoint, and that is the concept of flow. How important that is in every aspect of our lives. Can you talk to that? Talk to us about that.
Well, you just talked about that on a more macro level, but when you go into it on a micro level, and I look at people's auras, every person flows their energies in their aura. It's not how that energy flows, is that the energy flows at all. You know, I get people and they're all clear and all their chakras are good and they don't carry any burdens and they don't have any external sabotage and they're not armored and all these things that I look at. Yet there is nothing happening in their aura. It is totally still. These people are stagnant. They're not moving anywhere. But those, even if they have certain difficulties with other parts of their energy field, if their energy is flowing, then their life is flowing. And everything in this reality, in this physical reality, has an incoming and an outgoing tide. Things flow. It goes in and out. Everything, all energy is on a sine wave. It has highs and lows. It moves up and down. The seasons, the day becoming longer, the day becoming shorter. All of these are all various. The week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The months. the years. Everything flows. It's part of the cyclical unfoldment that we're on, and it's continuously going in cycles and cycles and turning and turning and moving and flowing. And so it happens in the microcosm, in your aura. It happens in the macrocosm, the earth running around, moving around the sun, and the sun being part of our solar system, and we moving at, I don't quite remember the exact amount of miles, but some 30 or 40,000 miles per second through the universe, through this empty space, hurtling at breakneck speeds that are impossible to comprehend. The circumference of our Earth per second, we're hurtling through space. And it's all part, and our expansion, our growing awareness becoming more and more and more and more and more and flowing back into the divine, the flow of what is happening. Yes, totally. Everything flows. Everything has a flow. And, you know, you talk about this is story of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I was born to resist. I came into this world. I felt rejected by the divine. And I said, I'm not going to budge until the divine picks me up again. And so then I realized energetically, being born into Switzerland, that I was born into a society that was doing things that are absolutely not the way my soul and spirit imagined things to go. And so I decided to resist. Additionally, I had it in for my dad, who was a very, very prominent and successful person. And I thought, well, the only way I can really get back at him is if I become a failure. So that's what I set out to do as a young person, to resist and to be a failure. And I was miserable.
Mm.
What a bad decision. Looking back at it, I see what I achieved. Now, sometimes resistance is good, and I have to give you a little example here.
Mm-hmm.
You have a light bulb, and electricity flows through the light bulb, and it is the resistance in the wire inside of the light bulb that makes the light, that creates the light, that kind of excites the electricity to become light. So sometimes resisting is actually positive in the sense that it defines who you are. Because without the resistance, you wouldn't see the light.
Hmm.
But at one point, once you've figured out who you are, you're way better off going with the flow and following that which the universe has in mind for you. Because, and I'm talking about the universe in general, it's much more precisely said, your soul, that which your soul has in mind for you. You and your soul is who you are, the eternal part of you, the eternal self that is not really part of this reality, that lives in the eternal now. And that who you are, the eternal self, has certain agendas. And once you realize that, and once you've figured out who you are, then it's time to just give in, to follow the flow that has been dictated. Because once you are at that point, you realize the flow that has been already prepared for you is to the greatest benefit that it can be. And so giving up resistance and just following the flow, which, by the way, for me is following my bliss,
mm-hmm.
just creates a life that is phenomenal, absolutely out of this world, just over the top.
You know, you used a word earlier, too, and I wanted to dive into this, too, in light of everything else we've talked about since, and the relationship between our free will, the intuitive messages that we receive, and our desire, if we have reached to that level, to be of service to humanity in whatever capacity that may be. I have the credential, shall we say, of Reiki Master. Okay, that's fine. I don't use it that often. But I also have the experience in broadcasting and interviewing and all these kinds of things, which is pretty much my passion. But here's the thing I would like for you to expound on here before we wrap up the program. And before we go, I want to thank you again for giving us so much time here. But I want to have you explain or express from your perspective the relationship between free will, which says we can do whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want, to whomever we want, okay, versus an individual who desires to do the will of the divine, whatever phrase or a personal pronoun you choose to use to describe that. In terms of our own free will, how do you juxtapose wanting to do the will of the divine and yet still maintain your free will? Or is it a question of, if I choose to do the will of the divine, I'm going to willingly
by your free will
give up my free will?
Exactly.
Okay.
So this is a really odd circumstance, but basically it's the same with love. And so you first have to love yourself before you can love somebody else truly. So you learn on yourself what it is to be loving before you can do it. And it's the same with will. You learn first on your own what your will is, so that you recognize will. And once you know what your will is and you are activating that, then you'll be able to recognize the will of the divine. So you first have to create your reality before you can co-create your reality, where the divine comes in and helps you create your reality. So everything that we experience here, is first you have to do it on your own. And then once you worked the kinks out and you know how it works, then you can apply it to others. So we go through four different phases of identification in our lives. The first identification is the things you have. Look, mommy, this toy, I have this toy. The next level of identification is what you do. I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. Once you grow up and you realize who you are, your next identification is who you are. But the final identification in life, and you might as well get there sooner than later because it is so beneficial, the final identification in life only relates to how much you love. The more you love, the more you can identify with that particular part of yourself, knowing that that is you. And so it's an unfoldment.
Yeah.
It's something that you learn. It's something that happens over time. But it's the same all over. You first have to love yourself before you can love others. You first have to express your will before you can recognize the will of God. And then, one of the between stages. You know, we're not connected to the divine directly. There's in between phases. Your next level up from who you are here is your higher self. And then the higher self has a higher self, and it goes up and up. And then on the other side is your soul, your eternal self, and your eternal self has a link with Goddess. And so for me at this point, the will, so to speak, the will of the divine is the will of my soul. And I'm at the point where my will and the will of my soul are identical. And so that creates a tremendous amount of fulfillment, that creates a tremendous amount of passion and bliss and love and happiness and knowing that I belong to the divine, because I know the divine loves me unconditionally. I said that already, but to me that's a real important aspect of who I am, and that I'm not forsaken, that I'm not just let to hang dry. I'm part of the whole. I'm part of the oneness. And so in that oneness, I flow within the intention that that oneness has. And it's just, it's like riding a surfboard on a wave. There's no effort. It just moves forward, takes me through my life, takes me through the things that I wish to do. I'm well taken care of physically. I have a beautiful relationship with my wife. I have all the love. I have friends. All the things I'm capable to express myself. I was impossible to express myself just 20 years ago because I had speech aphasia. My brain and my mouth would not coordinate. And all these things got fixed and healed because I'm worth it. I figured out that to have all the good things was way easier than to suffer. I've suffered a lot in my life. And now I've learned from those sufferings, and I've come to the conclusion that I can also learn that I don't need to suffer to learn anymore, that I can also learn from my successes. Mm. And that's where I'm at. So does that kind of answer your question?
It does. And it helps me to also bring forth the concept that I've quite often used, or the analogy, of course, of the Star Trek Next Generation character. I've talked about this many times on the program. We even actually did a program on mythology in regards to this. There's a character in the Next Generation series that sort of epitomizes this concept of being an individual who is a part of the whole, who acknowledges, who does their part. And that's the character called the Borg. Setting aside the nefarious aspects thereof, they are individuals. Each one is unique and different. But they're all wired in, okay, to the collective, if you will. And they're receiving information. And they are to carry out their individual tasks, which are all different, for, shall we say, the common good, okay, or the common goal. And that's the way it is, and that's why I was wanting to have you address this from the standpoint of especially that intuitive connection that we have, that intuition that we have with the divine, so that we can sort of get and follow those instructions. But it has been brought to my attention on more than one occasion, and I'll have you address this too. How can we be sure that that information that we're receiving via that intuitive connection is the, how can I put this, the correct information that is actually for the betterment of the humanity, of the planet, if you will, in that context?
So here we get into a point where we have to learn to live holistically. Holistic, I mentioned earlier, functioning on the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual. So when you are faced with a, and also So when you're faced with a, let's say, a situation, there's something that's coming up in your life and you have to make a decision. And so you think about it and you say, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to do. That's not living holistically. That's just you going into your mental. So when you get information, when you perceive things, when you have things to decide, you need to run this through all four levels. You can, well, how? What do I think about this? What does my body, the physical, what does my body think about this? Or how does my body respond to this? How do I feel about this? And what does my higher intelligence perceive around my light self perceive about this? And so you go and say, oh, okay, well, spiritually, that seems to be a good idea. And mentally, yeah, that could work out. Emotionally, oh, yeah, I feel great. And my body likes it. Okay, I think it's a go. Whereas if you come in and you say, well, I think it's a great idea, but, oh, it sucks the way it feels. And no, my body doesn't like it. And I need to be a little more precise about what the body likes and doesn't like. It has to do with your temperament. You know, if you're a really outdoorsy, active person and you want to move, don't go and make a decision to get this new job, which is a desk job. Not good. Your body will hate you for it. It doesn't like sitting all day. You like to move. You like to dance. You like to be out in nature and hug trees. Do not get a full-time desk job. So that's the body input. How does it feel to the body? And so, and finally, well, spiritually, no, that's not really a good idea either. So you have mental yes and the other three no. You have to say no, because it's like a vote, even if it's half and half. That's not a good place to be. You initially need to deal with those aspects where all four aspects of you can be in agreement. That's what will work. You know, we are in a society where everything is done by majority vote.
Mm-hmm.
51% say yes, everybody has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is really bad, because the 49% who have been outvoted are going to resent to go along. So the best way is to work in consensus.
Yeah.
Where everybody agrees, because then everybody's on board.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too. I've used I am a fan of analogies, and I'm sure they have different names as far as metaphors or similes or what have you. But one in particular that I think fully describes what you're talking about to one level, and I've talked about this with people all the time. I ask, we have a trillion cells in our bodies, all right? And each cell is doing its job, and it's doing a different job. The heart cells are not doing the same job as the eye cells. The brain cells aren't doing the same job as the toenail cells, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I ask the question, and this goes to the core of most of the world philosophies, especially the most renowned or known or famous, I suppose, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, et cetera, under what ism do the cells of the body function? Now, in a healthy body. And you know that it is not democracy, because if it were, you'd have the chaos we've got today. You wouldn't even have a body. It would disintegrate, because each cell would want to have its say and want to do its own thing. So I coined the phrase, the ism is interdependentism. And it, to me, that also describes the relationship, if you will, that we have to one another and to the divine, right?
Yeah, it's very much into synergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating to me, and I would love to continue this conversation with you. And like I, as I said earlier, would love to have you either come up here to Santa Barbara or we come down to Los Angeles and digitally record the program. But it's fascinating stuff, and we've only scratched the surface of some of the things that that you have to offer. Daniel the Healer, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing all of these different ideas and then some. People can go to your website, which is DanielTheHealer.com. Find out more about you, about the work that you do. You can see those videos. And again, it's much appreciated, the time that you've given us. And again, we encourage you, if you'd like, we'd love to have you in studio to converse further. And before we let you go, I do have three other questions for you, but I do want to remind our listeners that if you're listening to the radio broadcast, there's more. You need to go to the podcast at SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, or go to the homepage of RichardDugan.com. The playlists are there. So the first of the three questions, if I may, is who is Daniel the Healer?
A loving human being.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
That's not a two-word response. That's way deeper. We are at the threshold of a glorious, absolutely stunning new times. This is really what's been advertised or hoped for eons and centuries about the heaven on earth times, the Xanadu that is about to unfold. What I hope to do, what I wish to do, is as the midwife of this new reality being birthed into existence, is to bring this existence into reality.
And my final question is, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose was to create a map to be able to come out of the worst situations and make it to the top. For me specifically, it was to be as far away from the divine as I possibly could be, which is in physical existence within shame, and to get out of that and to find and to actualize and realize that I am a divine being.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for joining us here on the program and for sharing your story and the work that you do. And I don't know, I'm just compelled at this point to open this up and basically ask you if there is anything in particular that you would like to share with our listeners at this point as we close out the program.
Yes. Don't give up hope. Hope is very, very important. You create your own reality. You do this with your thoughts, feelings, choices and decisions, beliefs and attitudes. This is what holds the glue. Keep your resonance high. Keep it in such a way that you are projecting only high vibes into your world, because your world is created by how you perceive yourself, how your self-image, how you decide to think about it, feel about it. And if you keep the resonance high, then your world has to follow. It's just no other way. Do not be in self-pity, victim, or martyr. Feel hope. Feel the greatness. Feel yourself. Every morning, I get up and I feel the 30-foot giant of light who I am. I feel that. I go in there and then I feel what it is and I bring it back into this physical 6-foot-tall body. And I project and think everything from that point of view, and I keep the resonance high. And if I keep the resonance high, I know that all the crap out there ultimately will be inconsequential.
Well, again, Daniel, thank you so much for joining us, and great words to live by and to work towards, and we hope to meet you at the top there as well. I'm Richard Duke, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.